why, hello there. And that's the worst Alec Guinness impersonation in the world. My name is Jim, and welcome to this dispatch from Wild Space. I don't know what else to call it, where I'm just going to come on from time to time and talk about the things that's going on in the Star Wars universe or the world of the industry that produces Star Wars content. And I'm just going to chat about it for a while, and hopefully that'll be enough to spur a conversation on our Facebook group, appropriately titled Holonet HQ. So first, a couple of housekeeping things. I posted about this over the weekend, but I really want to drive it home how sorry I am that we can't get the technical stuff right so that we can do the actual play podcast of the Star Wars role-playing game campaign that I'm currently running. It's a larger group. A lot of actual play podcasts only have three or four players. And of course, I like to shoot big, and I have a full six-player complement, which, if you know anything about tabletop RPGs, is a lot of people. So that was going to create a heavier technical lift with microphones and splitters and soundboards and all this other stuff. And it just didn't work out. There was a few hiccups which hit us on the first session, and then even more hiccups that hit us on the second session. So we decided to punt. This is not something that we're going to give up on. We want to do some role-playing actual play stuff, because for those of you who are uninitiated to the world of tabletop role-playing games, it's an interesting way to tell stories in a variety of settings, and this one would be Star Wars. The second thing that I want to say again is that the Force is strong with Nicole Penley and Robert Lucchese, who have both agreed to serve as co-moderators of the Facebook page for Holonet HQ. As many of you know, I work a fairly crazy job. For those of you who don't know me, just trust me, I work a fairly crazy job that keeps me up at all hours of the night sometimes, and days on end on single projects and several all at the same time. The bottom line is I needed to free up some of my bandwidth. So having Robert and Nikki around to help me moderate the group, whether it's posting articles, provoking discussions, or approving members that we hope we can recruit into our little fraternity slash sorority of Star Wars aficionados. Can I use the word aficionados? Well, I guess it's too late. I already did. The point that I'm trying to make is this, is that Robert and Nikki are going to help me out immensely in freeing up my bandwidth so that I can work on the podcast, work on graphic content, which is the main channel that this feed currently occupies, and lets me have a semblance of a life outside of being on a microphone or on the internet. Who am I kidding? I'm going to be on the internet a lot anyway. The point is they're going to be able to help me free up my time so I can have a little bit of fun in addition to this great hobby that I have, and that's podcasting. So why am I on your internet feed right now? And I guess the ultimate thing is there was that whole, I don't know what you want to call it, kerfuffle? I like the word kerfuffle. The kerfuffle that happened between Lucasfilm and directors Christopher Lord and, excuse me, Christopher Miller and Phil Lord, who were directing the still as yet untitled Han Solo spinoff movie. And it's a terribly large deal. And this is why. I can think of maybe one or two occasions in my life, and I just turned 48 years old, where a director has been fired off a project with weeks left of principal photography. Now, forget the fact that this is a Star Wars movie. The fact that you fire two named directors who have made hundreds of millions of dollars for studios with movies like The Lego Movie and the 221 Jump Street films, and okay, 21 Jump Street and its sequel, 22 Jump Street, guys who have worked on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, people who have worked on The Last Man on Earth, which is a brilliant comedy on the Fox network. That alone would have been an event of seismic proportions. throw in the fact that you're putting it under a magnifying lens that has Star Wars written on it. And not only do you have the entire entertainment spectra going from the news outlets to the rumor sites to the internet pundits, ding, 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 hello, I'm raising my hand here. I know you can't see it, but just trust me, it's happening. To just regular old everyday Joe and Jane fans. It's just unimaginable that 3 weeks of photography were all that was left of Principle, that the entire cast had filmed the vast majority of the film. Now, in full disclosure, there was already a pre-planned, God, I hate that word, but an already planned amount of reshoots that they bake into all of these films. You know, Rogue One had some really notorious reshoots, but just about any blockbuster film, as directors get into the editing bay, they realize that they don't have to just make do. They can bring the cast back in to film little quick bits to really round out the story that they want to put out there. So the reshoots themselves were expected. The problem is that now that time, that 7 to 8 weeks of reshoots, plus the 3 weeks of principal photography, is all that Ron Howard has to finish this film. So you can say probably about 80 to 85% of this film has been shot by Lord and Miller, and Ron Howard is not only going to have to film new stuff to craft the story that really threw the nose out of joint on both Kathleen Kennedy and Lawrence Kasdan, and we'll talk about that in a second. Not only does he get only that time to film whatever it is that he needs, so essentially, he's got maybe max 11 weeks, maybe 12, to finish this film. And if he is going to significantly rewrite or reshoot, that is a lot of scrambling to do. Why was Lord and Miller fired off of this project? Well, I mean, you have to believe that for some reason, there were pitch meetings. I'm sure Lord and Miller's representatives were there. I'm sure Kathy Kennedy, Lawrence Kasdan, John Kasdan, his son, who co-wrote the film with his dad, as well as Kiri Hart and the other members of the Lucas Story Group, were all in the pitch meeting, and they must have said something right to get hired. So how is it that they made it that far? Well, I mean, we can speculate as much as you want. The bottom line is, Star Wars is a corporate property. Star Wars was purchased for billions of dollars in 2012 from the maker, George Lucas himself. And Bob Iger and Alan Horn, the two grand poobahs over at Disney, essentially run this IP through Kathleen Kennedy. Yes, she is probably one of the most experienced executive producers in Hollywood. She is a filmmaker's producer. She has worked with Spielberg. She has worked with Ron Howard. She has worked with Frank Darabont. She has worked with George Lucas. I mean, she has worked with the greats, the modern greats of the previous generation of filmmakers. And I believed her when at Celebration, I want to say it was 2015, the one that was in Anaheim a few years ago, that the Star Wars saga films, episodes 7, 8, 9, and the 6 that took place before it, were about making the main Star Wars movie with that Star Wars feel, that baked in nostalgia with brand new special effects and brand new characters and new situations, but that essentially in its guts, it was going to be, you know, a continuation of the saga that we've seen, like George was still there. You know, J.J. Abrams, say what you want, he was able to deliver a film that appealed to everybody who was there that saw Episode 4, whether it was in 1977 when I was 8 years old, or flash forward 20 years when I was 28 years old and watched the special editions and went, oh my God, what were you guys doing with this? But he was able to bring all of those fans back to the franchise. And yes, The Force Awakens was a retread, but he had to put that film out so that you could set up the new. That is my feeling of the film. Is it my favorite Star Wars movie? No. But do I love The Force Awakens? Absolutely. It's given us Rey, who is ostensibly next to Wonder Woman, who is doing bonkers business in the box office right now. Rey has really broken the mold and become the first full-fledged Star Wars heroine since Carrie Fisher. That's all due respect to Natalie Portman. I feel like she was miscast and underutilized in the prequels. Maybe the less said about that, the better. I digress, you know. But those are the saga films. Around the same time, Kathy Kennedy said, or at least I took it, as well as many fans and many pundits, internet pundits, which I guess I'm joining the ranks of with this podcast, many people thought that the anthology films were going to be a way of telling films in the Star Wars universe, but with slightly different voices. You know, I believed Gareth Edwards in 2015 after he showed that sizzle reel of, you know, looking up from the planet below and seeing the Death Star, like we would see a high moon or whatever, a blue moon. I believed he was going to make a gritty, dark war movie. I remember the quote went something along the lines of, he was asked by the moderator of the panel at Celebration, what kind of movie is Rogue One going to be? And he said, well, it's called Star Wars for a reason. And he really wanted to get into a wars piece. And I loved Rogue One. I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. I loved the espionage elements of it. I loved the character, the conflicted character of Jyn Erso. I loved Forest Whitaker's crazy performance. Are you here to kill me? Okay, I can't. I shouldn't even try to do voices. I really do need a podcasting partner for this. No, I'm here. I'm doing this. Forget I said anything. The point is that he set out to make a war movie, and he delivered a dark war/spy thriller adventure movie. However, I have to say, though, that they played some soft shoe with it at times also. I mean, it got very Star Wars-y, especially when Admiral Radda said, probe that shield! You know, that space battle, as awesome as it was very reminiscent of other things that we had seen in various Star Wars properties, whether it be the main film series or even in TV animated shows like The Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. So that's the stuff that I believe Tony Gilroy, who is a talented filmmaker and one of the co-writers of Rogue One, he was brought in to be the veteran hand to essentially, and I heard this term on another podcast today, and I blanking on the name of it. So if you were that podcaster, please write into us on the Facebook feed. But quote unquote, ghost directed the last bit of reshoots for the film, with Gareth directing the awesome Vader scene where he just tears the rebels apart, and that part was awesome. Am I making any sense here? I hope so. I mean, essentially, Gareth Edwards was allowed to make his movie, but in the end, there was something about what he was delivering that Kathy Kennedy and the powers that be at Lucasfilm just thought wasn't Star Wars enough. Now, stick with me here on this premise. So what happens next? Well, another guy was supposed to show up at Celebration that year, and this is a guy by the name of Josh Trank. Now, most of you probably know him as the guy who was the helmer of one of the most disastrous superhero movies that I have seen in the last 15 years. I mean, this guy made a movie that is ostensibly worse than Elektra. Yes, I paid money for that movie, but he was the guy behind Fantastic Four. Wow, that was a movie where you can tell Josh Trank made it up until a certain point, and then the executives took over, where there were whole things, just like in Rogue One, where what was promised in the trailers just did not appear in the final cut of the film. Now, that's me giving all due respect to Josh Trank, who was more than likely not allowed to realize his vision on Fantastic Four. However, the trades, and by the trades, I'm citing sources like Variety, Empire Magazine, The Hollywood Reporter, even Entertainment Weekly, as shallow as I believe that magazine is in its editorial capacity from time to time, there was rumors of Josh Trank having an almost frat boy atmosphere with some really crazy tales. Just look it up on the internet. You know, Josh Trank rental house during Fantastic Four. That's all I'm going to say. But apparently it got pretty wild. Him and his 12 dogs. I mean, it was bonkers at one point. But what happens before Celebration? Well, it was announced that he was supposed to helm a project that all the trades were reporting was supposed to be Boba Fett-centric. And just days before Celebration, an announcement, a press release came out saying that he had caught flu and was not going to be able to make it. His stomach flu, and he was just terrible. Ugh, so sick. And then what happens the following week after Celebration? Well, he's no longer attached to that film. So, how did that happen? Well, it could have been a variety of reasons why. One of the producers of the new Star Wars films is a guy by the name of Simon Kinberg, who is a great writer. I think he has written some great scripts. He's heavily involved in the X-Men franchise over at Fox. He has been producing various Star Wars content, including the current iteration of their animated show, Star Wars Rebels. And Simon Kinberg was a writer and producer on Fantastic Four, who allegedly had more than one meltdown rage session with Josh Trank after another. And there's not a lot of connect the dots necessary to see how the relationship between Trank and Lucasfilm might have suffered if Simon Kinberg was the common vector in that. And now we have the untitled Star Wars movie. I hate saying the untitled Star Wars movie, the untitled Han Solo Star Wars movie. I'm just going to start calling it Han Solo. How about that? I mean, what happened with that? I mean, so what did it? Word is that there was just too much improv, that they were only taking about 3 to 4 shots a day, where the industry standard is doing between 12 and 15 shots a day. And by that, I mean where they actually set up the lights and the sound and the cameras in different angles, different directions to get a whole spectrum of angles and looks at what the actors are doing on the film set. And apparently Lord and Miller were like, 1, 2, 3, boom, boom, boom. Okay, say your lines, hit it. Hey, how about you say this? And they were encouraging a lot of improv, a lot of funny improv to happen on the set. Well, this is a script by Lawrence Kasdan. This is a guy who has written some amazing films. I mean, Grand Canyon, The Big Chill, Silverado, The Empire Strikes Back. You know, this is a guy, Return of the Jedi. I mean, this is a guy who has made amazing films and written for amazing films. And he is used to being, he is used to seeing his scripts being directed to the letter with not much improv. Now, granted, Harrison Ford nailed it with "I Know" after Leia said, "I love you." I mean, even Lawrence Kasdan said, "Okay, that shit's good." But, you know, we're talking about a crew that doesn't have a cast that doesn't have a Harrison Ford on it. Alden Ehrenreich has been in, what, 2 movies? You know, one of which was terrible, and he was the only good part in it. It was the latest Coen Brothers movie, Hail Caesar. It was just horrific. He was great, but it was horrific. The point that I'm making is that whatever it was that Lord and Miller had agreed to in their pitch meeting apparently was not being delivered to. And their improv, their turning this Star Wars movie into a comedy was just not a thing they were looking for at Lucasfilm. But why did they wait so long? And that's the part that I just can't wrap my head around. Were they gun shy about, you know, pulling a director off of a film after Josh Trank? Were they gun-shy about bringing in Ron Howard, who, by the way, nobody, please, please, nobody hate on Ron Howard. He did nothing other than accept a job to try to right the ship in the end. I mean, you know, could, you know, maybe they decided not to play the way Gareth Edwards played, where Tony Gilroy ghost-directed Rogue One. Maybe they pitched to them, and by they I mean Kathleen Kennedy and Kasdan and company, maybe they pitched to Lord and Miller, hey, tell you what, we're going to bring Ron Howard onto set. He is going to advise you to on directorial choices to make through the end of the filming and through the reshoots. Could you just do that for us? And Lord and Miller, in reading a particular piece on the Hollywood Reporter, which was quite eye-opening, apparently are really prickly when it comes to creative decisions. Maybe they shouldn't work with big-budget studio blockbuster films, because that's not the way these films are made, you know? Unfortunately, these guys got to see how the Star Wars sausage was made, and they decided to have none of it. So they rather be fired than quit, and that's what happened. I mean, they were pulled off on a Monday, and Ron Howard was hired on a Thursday. I could have my days wrong. If so, please write, let me know, correct me. I'm a highly correctable and criticizable individual. I know when I make mistakes. But the point is that I think Lord and Miller were hired for a reason. And this is why I think Lord and Miller were hired for a reason. And that's going back to Kathleen Kennedy's initial comments about the Star Wars anthology films, or what's later been known as the Star Wars story films, were supposed to be about bringing different voices to the Star Wars intellectual property. And that's because of an interview that I read in Empire Magazine. I want to say it was November. It was around the time that Arrival came out in theaters. And if you haven't seen Arrival, I think it's a fantastic science fiction film. I mean, fantastic. I mean, not as good as Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but definitely of that ilk, of that vibe. And in reading the article that they had with that film's cinematographer, a gentleman by the name of Bradford Young, who worked on a couple of other fantastic films, like A Most Violent Year, which starred Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain. He did the cinematography for that. He also did the cinematography for Ava DuVernay's Selma, which, holy God, that film is a masterpiece. You need to see this film. I mean, yes, it tells one of the most important stories in American history, but it also tells it with some of the most beautiful lens work that I have seen in films. And look, I'm no expert. I'm not a cinematographer. I'm just playing one on the internet. But you can tell that this guy is up there with another cinematographer that I know by name, and that's a guy named Roger Deakins, the guy who did the cinematography for, Sicario. And a ton of other great films. This guy, and I'm just blanking in. I don't want to go to the IMDb right now. Just IMDb Roger Deakins. And then IMDb Bradford Young. And you will see that this guy is the heir apparent to his lens work. And he, in this Empire, let me get back to the Empire Magazine article. I digress. In the Empire Magazine article where they interview him, he wasn't sure if he wanted to take the as-yet-untitled Han Solo Star Wars spinoff movie. But he wasn't sure if he wanted to take that project on until he met with Lord and Miller. Now, this is a guy whose movies were A Most Violent Year, Selma, and Arrival. I want you to put that in your headspace for a second. Okay, this guy does not make Bachelor Party. This is not the guy who was working with them on 21 and 22 Jump Street. This is not the guy who did the cinematography for the new Baywatch bomb that came out last month. This is a guy who is going to get a mantle full of Oscars one day, if not for directing, which I think many great cinematographers go off to, but he is definitely going to earn a whole mantleful just for cinematography. If Bradford Young saw what Lord and Miller were planning to cook with this film and could imagine the flavors that were coming out of this product, then there's a piece of me as a fan of film, in addition to being a fan of Star Wars, that makes me believe that Lord and Miller might have really hit on something really, really awesome. The problem is it might not have been Star Wars enough. Let that sink in for a second. They might have been making one hell of a space cowboy comedy movie that was unfortunately titled Han Solo. Now, let's forget all the other rumors. You know, the rumors about the crew applauding when they heard that Lord and Miller were taken off the project. The stuff that's being bantied about now about an acting coach being brought in for Alden Ehrenreich at the last minute, you know. All that information is so fresh and so poorly sourced, I think, at this point. It's hard to say what's true or not true. But the fact of the matter is, you can go back and look for the Bradford Young Empire article, and it's there. He talked about it. He allowed that to go to print. Lord and Miller impressed him with what they wanted to bring to telling about the story about how Han Solo got his start as a space cowboy. I call space cowboy, but we all know he was a smuggler and a general of the rebellion, but I think you all know what I'm talking about. The bottom line is this. Star Wars, whether we Star Wars fans like it being a corporate-owned property that's going to give us so much nostalgia feels, that's going to give us so much more IP than what we have gotten under the George Lucas-helmed regime, the stuff that's going to give us more animated series like the final seasons of Rebels, the new short series Forces for Change, which to me look amazing. Whatever project Dave Filoni is going to take on afterwards, the rumored for years Knights of the Old Republic or whatever live action series that's going to be on Netflix or HBO or whatever, you know, we wouldn't have had this if it wasn't for the Disney takeover. So there's me, the Star Wars consumer, the Star Wars fan, that loves all this stuff. My 50th birthday is going to be in the very month that Star Wars Land opens at the Disney theme parks in the U.S. So I think that if you can flip a coin and figure out which one I'm going to be at. Hint, I live in California. I know where I'm going to spend my 50th birthday. Star Wars is like time zero. It is constantly chasing me. And I love it. It's that tether that I have back to that 8-year-old in 1977 in Toms River, New Jersey, watching that film on the big screen, never having seen a film just like that before. And quite honestly, 40 years later, I've never seen since. So for that, I am somewhat grateful that Kathy Kennedy took the stance that she did, that if it wasn't Star Wars, what are we doing with this? However, I'm also a fan of film. I'm also a fan of creators. I'm also a fan of the idea that corporations typically don't make good creatives. Now look, I have very little experience as a creative. I've written a couple of doodads for a friend's RPG line, role-playing game line before, but nothing serious. But I've done some acting in local theater. I've done some directing in local theater. You know, I keep thinking of new projects I want to work on, and obviously I'm doing something by sitting here in the Holonet HQ headquarters and taking the time to give you my thoughts on this whole thing. I think this is a creative endeavor. And I couldn't imagine selling my property, Holonet HQ, to Disney and then having some guy say that my podcast is not Star Wars enough. I just don't know how I would take that. Maybe the analogy doesn't hold water. I don't know. I'll leave that up to you, the listener. But I feel like these guys walked in with a vision. They walked in with storyboards. They were probably doing the boards with all the keywords. What do they call that? A desire board or something like that. You know, they went in and jumped through all the corporate creative hoops. And Kathy Kennedy said, "You're the guy." And Lawrence Kasdan and his son John banged out a script. And then they didn't like the execution. Well, I think at a certain point, you need to step back and ask yourself, is this something George would have done? Because like it or not, George Lucas is up there with Francis Ford Coppola as one of the most, if not the most, influential and successful independent filmmakers of all time. No one told George what to do. George made. Now, I really wish Kathleen Kennedy was around during the prequels, because maybe she could have taken George aside and said, "Hey, George, can you not do that? Well, I just want them to, you know, go faster and more intense." That was a much better. I'm trying too hard? Okay, that's me talking to myself. Pay me no mind. The point is this. George could have used a backstop back then, I know. But here's the thing. It belonged to George. And yes, Disney owns Star Wars and Lucasfilm, and via Kathleen Kennedy as its head, they manage the Star Wars property. So they are well within their rights. And I want to say that, put my hand down on the table, my other hand square up and say, yeah, this is they're fully within their rights to do that. Again, this was Lawrence Kasdan's swan song when it came to Star Wars. This was going to be his very last project. And he wanted to go off on a high note. And if Lawrence Kasdan was feeling the bile coming up in his mouth when he was watching the dailies, and he called Kathleen Kennedy and she was feeling the same way, maybe I would have made the same decision if I was in their shoes. But there's also a part of me that says that there's a spirit to Star Wars that's being denied. And that spirit is saying, you know what? All the other studios in creation didn't believe in this property. When George tried to pitch this, it was an act of God. It was a miracle that he managed to get 20th Century Fox to give him the merchandising rights for this so that he can make money on the back end to produce fully independently The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. So I feel like there's a spirit of independence through this whole process over the last week or so, which has been lost. And, you know, I just hope that the powers that be at Lucasfilm, whether it's Kathleen Kennedy, whether it's Kiri Hart and the story group, whoever is responsible for whatever, that they remember that spirit of independence that George brought to the property. It meant something. It is something. It matters in Hollywood to this day. Studio blockbusters are almost written by algorithms. I mean, look at the Transformers franchise. Now, granted, Transformers 5, I mean, they drove it into a ditch with $47.5 million domestic last week. But the previous Transformers movie, I mean, again, we're talking Transformers movies. So we're talking CGI shite, okay? We're talking some of the worst story-driven films, in my opinion. If you love Transformers, love Transformers. Love all of their movies. If you're a Michael Bay fan, God bless. But you know what? It's a Michael Bay movie that was making billions of dollars year after year, release after release until now. Maybe people are finally tired of the visual noise. I don't know. But do we want Star Wars to go the way where they're being written by algorithm, by way of, you know, we're going to write it for the Chinese market, we're going to write it for the European market, and we're going to write this for the North American market? I mean, isn't that just fucking vanilla? Excuse my French. Isn't that vanilla? Don't we deserve better? Say what you want to about the prequels, but I knew they were George's vision. I didn't agree with them, and times I was even offended by it. But I knew it was all George. And I hope for the future of whatever the Star Wars stories, quote-unquote, or the quote-unquote anthology films, I hope for the future that they figure out exactly what it is that they want to do with them. Otherwise, just give us saga movies every 2 years. You know, let's see the progression of the storyline of the Skywalker dynasty and all of their friends and foes that they meet along the way. I really hope they make a good movie out of this Han Solo film. Although, they're also going to need a new editor because I heard they fired him too. So, anyway, that's my long rambling take on the news of the last week regarding the dismissal of Lord and Miller over quote unquote creative differences. Yes, it took me this long to get to that term that they used in each of their press statements. So look, this is what I want to do. I want to start a conversation. These are just my opinions. They're not the opinions of anybody who's contributed to the previous episode of Holonet HQ or anybody else that works or just are a member of the page. Tell me what you think. Comment in the thread below this post. I am posting this immediately tonight after I finish some quick edits on it. I want to know what you guys think about what I said here. And as some of you might know, I do try to take all criticism as constructively as possible. The vast majority of you are my friends, if not all of you. And I really want to hear what you say. So that's all I've got for now. And hopefully this is as much chaos as Han Solo is going to see. Hopefully in our next roundtable, we can talk more about looking forward to episode 8, which so far Rian Johnson hasn't been fired off of. And we can look forward to all the other Star Wars-y goodness that's coming out down the road. So again, comment here on Holonet HQ. And until the next time, I love saying this. May the Force be with you. Always.